The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Forward, face up at OrnegillMD.com. Dr. Gill has expanded her gynecology practice to include 360-degree health. Combining aesthetics with medical expertise ensures superior outcomes. State-of-the-art AI-driven 3D scanning gives you precise and safe results for your face. Strengthen your body and look good by combining the balance of hormones and immune health with Botox, filler, and laser. Improve your confidence, zeal, and relationships at OrnegillMD.com. New liquid technology creates natural face, neck, and brow lift, as well as liquid rhinoplasty and Dr. Gill's famous lip flip. Go to OrnegillMD.com to balance your body and reclaim your best, most beautiful self. Follow Dr. Gill on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Book your appointment online at OrnegillMD.com or call 530-768-4504.
Get a great deal on select Kubota equipment, the number one rated tractor brand for durability and owner experience in the U.S. The versatile lineup features performance matched attachments to help you make the most of your land. Right now at participating dealers, get a Kubota compact tractor for zero down, 0% APR for 84 months. Now through June 30th. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com/offers for full disclaimer.
Hi, this is Chelsea with NorCal Tractor and Equipment. You do it all, we do it local.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersch, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretta trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular vibroplates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, gravels, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersch, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
Why did you switch to Dish?
Everything was going okay with DirecTV,
but our bill was out of control. We saved $280.
$270.
$300. Like, holy
savings.
Hey, guys, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite, your authorized Dish retailer. We've been offering holy savings like these since 1999. Being local, we listen to your needs in the TV entertainment, and we give you the best that we can. At B&T Satellite, we've saved some of our customers $600 to $1,200. Per year, and these prices are locked in for 2 years. Skip the 800 number waiting on hold for long periods of time. Call 241-3474. That's 241-DISH. And if you already have Dish, call us and we'll help you find great ways to upgrade and save money in the years to come.
You're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM at 1460 AM, your talk radio. Online at KCNR1460.com.
Crossroads Auto Body Repair, still the best price in town, working hard on your dents, dings, and complete paint jobs if your car is peeling or faded. Call for your free written estimate today. They've worked on thousands of vehicles over the years here in Reading, and they accept all insurance companies. Call 530-226-0992.
We'll do it right, and we'll do it fast. Let us get you back on the road again.
Crossroads. We're here to get you back out on the road.
Signs, signs, signs. That's right, Wonderland Signs has your signs. Big signs, we do them. Vehicle wraps, we do them. If it's a sign, we do them. Vinyl, paint, 3D murals, big, little, inside, outside, every sign you could want.
Sorry, Bob, could we sign a monster truck read? Could you do that again?
When you need sign work, Wonderland Signs is the one. Featuring the highest quality materials, longest warranties in the area, all at competitive prices. Wonderland Signs quality can't and won't be beat. From vinyl architectural to banners to magnetics, from 3D to vehicle wraps to sandblasted to murals. If it's a visual message you want to send, we can deliver. Plus, being that we are fully licensed, bonded, and insured contractors, we can install them in other sign shops can't. We even offer financing on many sign types. Check us out online at WonderlandSigns.com or come by the shop on South Market and meet the Wonderland Signs staff.
Mention this ad and get 50% off any pair of magnetic signs.
Wonderland Signs, now celebrating 33 years in business in the North State with amazing attention to detail and quality service. Wonderland Signs.
Hey there, Marty Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. Mimi and I have moved our tasting room back downtown to the corner of Pine and Butte Street across from Corbett's and the Reading Chamber of Commerce. We're open Wednesdays through Sundays from 3 to 7 p.m. and Fridays till 9 p.m. While you're here, enjoy food from the Hearth Kitchen and Pie Shop and munch on some delicious handmade chocolates by Nanette de Chocolate. Come on down and enjoy life with us, Mosley Family Cellars at the historic Thompson House. Come as guests and leave as family.
A Moment in History by KCNR Radio. The first reference to Shasta was made in 1814 by British explorer and fur trapper Alexander Henry, who wrote about the Shasta tribe of Indians living on the mountain. Another version suggests that Shasta is a corruption of the Russian word Tashel, meaning white or pure mountain. Russian fur trappers were in the area from 1812 to 1842. In 1827, Hudson Bay's company brigade leader Peter Skeen Ogden wrote in his diary, "I have named this river Saskeen River. There is a mountain equal in height to Mount Hood or Vancouver. I have named it Mount Saskeen." In later years, the words Shasti, Sastis, Chasta, Chastala, Sasti, and Sasti, or several more, were used, all references to Mount Shasta. Mail to the early Shasta residents arrived addressed to Shastea, Sasti, Sasta, and Shasti. This was contributed by Dottie Smith. A Moment in History by KCNR Radio. Shasta County mining can be divided into three distinct episodes. The gold rush erupted in 1849, it peaked in the 1850s and faded by the late 1850s. Soon thereafter, surveyors began laying out township, ranges, sections, and mining properties. Early placer mining efforts during the gold rush were gradually but not totally supplanted by later hydraulic load and dredge techniques. The second major mining type was copper mining, which became a major industry in the 1880s and replaced gold in 1896 as the number one mineral produced in Shasta County. Copper mining was a tremendous economic stimulus to Shasta County. Copper was mined until 1869, with peak production years occurring from 1897 to 1919 and during 1924 and 1925. The third wave of gold production peaked again from 1908 to 1915 and once more from 1936 to 1941 during the Depression, when the price of gold rose from $20 to $35 an ounce. Contributed by Dottie Smith. A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. The Battle Creek Bridge crosses Battle Creek on Gillies Ferry Road. The north side of the bridge is in Shasta County and the south side is in Tehama County. It was built in 1911, is 152 feet long, and was engineered by Robert L. Reading, son of Major Reading. In 1984, a new bridge was built on its east side because it was too narrow, load-limited, and posted for less than current legal loads. The old bridge was left in place and today is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. To find out more about Dottie Smith, go to the Shasta County Historical Society.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. In 1889, the Lady of Justice was placed on top of the dome of the Shasta County Courthouse. Later in 1959, the statue had lost her sword after high winds broke it from its hilt. The broken-off piece precariously perched on a platform surrounding the statue. Maintenance supervisor Lloyd Knox removed the sword so it wouldn't fall from the roof. The sword was repaired and returned later that year. By 1963, the statue was removed from the old courthouse by helicopter. It was then put in a brick monument on the courthouse lawn. Vandals started to attack the statue. Over the following years, the sword was stolen 3 times, the scales once. Someone tried to cut off the head with an axe. All the statue's fingers, except for the thumb on the left hand, were beaten away, and the back was so severely beaten it caused the pot iron she's made of to break away, creating a large hole in the center of her back. In 2008, it was removed for safekeeping and restoration to be placed in the new courthouse currently under construction.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Father Rinaldi's foundation is located in Shasta and is the remains of a Catholic church that was never built. Father Rinaldi was a Catholic priest who was sent to Shasta in 1855. He had big dreams, and he was determined to build a church that would surpass any other building in the Gold Country. Plans called for a basilica to have the walls of cut stone copied after the architecture of the great Italian Renaissance buildings. He began raising money through donations. The ground was broke for the basilica in 1856, and in 1857 the cornerstone was laid by Archbishop Joseph Alamy of San Francisco. During that same year, the foundation was built. But soon after, Rinaldi was transferred to another church. The foundation is located at the corner of Crocker Alley and Red Bluff Street in Shasta. It's privately owned and is not part of the Shasta State Historic Park. Want more Dottie? Go to the Shasta Historical Society.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Join me for my show, North State Now, on the first Thursday of every month. We'll cover what's going on in the North State, Axiom Theater, local theater, art, food, film, and even the latest in astrology. That's North State Now on the first Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. In February 1850, Shasta County was created as one of the California's original 27 counties. In September of that same year, California was admitted into the Union, meaning that Shasta County was even older than the state of California. Before Shasta County was named, Shasta residents held a town meeting in the middle of Main Street and named their town Shasta, presumably because Mount Shasta could be seen from the hills of the town. Originally, Mount Shasta was within Shasta County, but is now part of Siskiyou County. The original Shasta County included a major portion of Northern California, including Mount Shasta, and all the territory that later became Modoc, Lassen, and Siskiyou counties, as well as parts of the present-day Plumas and Tehama counties. Contributed by Dottie Smith.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Chinese men began arriving in Shasta County during the Gold Rush in the early 1850s, resulting in the establishment of Chinatowns in the outskirts of almost every town. Chinese were very devout in their religious beliefs. Incense was continuously burned in each house. When a house was entered, prostrations and chanting were made on the floor. A Joss House was located at the Shasta Chinatown, but was considered plain compared to the Joss House at Weaverville. A favorite Chinese rheumatism cure was sold in Chinese stores. It consisted of placing a live rattlesnake in a gallon of meat and malt whiskey for several days. When a patient drank a full shot glass, pain supposedly ceased and comfort soon followed. Want more, Dottie? Go to the Shasta County Historical Society.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information. Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Dr. C.A. Dingy was a dentist who lived approximately north of Middletown at Fort Dingy, named by him. He was buried in the Middleton Cemetery in a coffin filled with salt, his Bible, and a bottle of whiskey, all at his request. Winter rains brought the salt to the surface, causing deer and cattle to dig for it. To remedy the problem, a load of bricks was placed on top of the grave to protect it. Another interesting dentist was Dr. James Winsell, who settled beside Battle Creek near today's Coleman Fish Hatchery in 1852 on what was the Rancho de Brasgau Mexican land grant. A large ditch carried water out to Battle Creek at his place and transported it to the Balls Ferry flour mill at Balls Ferry, where it was used to turn the large water wheel. The ditch still exists and is used mainly for irrigation. Want more, Dottie? Go to the Shasta Historical Society.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. Shasta County mining can be divided into three distinct episodes. The gold rush erupted in 1849, it peaked in the 1850s and faded by the late 1850s. Soon thereafter, surveyors began laying out township, ranges, sections, and mining properties. Early placer mining efforts during the gold rush were gradually but not totally supplanted by later hydraulic load and dredge techniques. The second major mining type was copper mining, which became a major industry in the 1880s and replaced gold in 1896 as the number one mineral produced in Shasta County. Copper mining was a tremendous economic stimulus to Shasta County. Copper was mined until 1869, with peak production years occurring from 1897 to 1919 and during 1924 and 1925. The third wave of gold production peaked again from 1908 to 1915 and once more from 1936 to 1941 during the Depression, when the price of gold rose from $20 to $35 an ounce. Contributed by Dottie Smith. A Moment in History by KCNR Radio. The Potter's Cave is said to be among the finest in the United States. The first white man to enter the cave was J.A. Richardson in 1878. When deciding on a name for the cave, J.B. Potter was chosen, the man who became the first owner of the property in 1855. It's a limestone cave located by Shasta Caverns, archaeologists believe to be the possible locations of fossils of early man and extinct animals. Many thousands of specimens are found there, including 52 species, of which 21 are now extinct. The species included the short-faced bear, the shrub ox, the Shasta ground sloth, a horse, mammoth, bison, and a cameloid. The age of the Potter Creek Cave is supposedly not far from that of the earliest human deposits containing human remains found in Europe. It has, however, been determined that the bone implement-like pieces found in the original 1903 excavation are at least 8,000 years old. Contributed by Dottie Smith. A Moment in History by KCNR Radio. The first reference to Shasta was made in 1814 by British explorer and fur trapper Alexander Henry, who wrote about the Shasta tribe of Indians living on the mountain. Another version suggests that Shasta is a corruption of the Russian word Tashel, meaning white or pure mountain. Russian fur trappers were in the area from 1812 to 1842. In 1827, Hudson Bay's company brigade leader Peter Skeen Ogden wrote in his diary, "I have named this river Sastine River. There is a mountain equal in height to Mount Hood or Vancouver. I have named it Mount Sastine." In later years, the words Shasti, Sastis, Chasta, Chastala, Sasti, and Sasti, or several more, were used, all references to Mount Shasta. Mail to the early Shasta residents arrived addressed to Shastea, Sasti, Shasta, and Shasti. This was contributed by Dottie Smith. Moment in History by KCNR Radio. In February 1850, Shasta County was created as one of the California's original 27 counties. In September of that same year, California was admitted into the Union, meaning that Shasta County was even older than the state of California. Before Shasta County was named, Shasta residents held a town meeting in the middle of Main Street and named their town Shasta, presumably because Mount Shasta could be seen from the hills of the town. Originally, Mount Shasta was within Shasta County, but is now part of Siskiyou County. The original Shasta County included a major portion of Northern California, including Mount Shasta, and all the territory that later became Modoc, Lassen, and Siskiyou counties, as well as parts of the present-day Plumas and Tehama counties. Contributed by Dottie Smith.
Good afternoon. Okay, my own headphones are kind of loud.
Yeah, I'm a little loud.
We're all loud. Who was in here before? Deaf people?
Yeah.
What? You're supposed to say what? Welcome to We the People. Another unceremonious beginning. We like our unceremonious beginnings. Actually, it's a good thing we like them because
all we have.
It's our best material.
That's our hat trick.
It is. Oh my gosh. Well, we have a really fun show today. And we're not talking politics today, actually, because little does everyone know, actually a lot of people do know, but little does the general public know, yesterday was really Memorial Day.
Yep.
And so we planned this Memorial Day program with Ken Delfino a long time ago, and we put it on the weekend of Memorial Day, not realizing at the time
the real
that,
Memorial Day.
That the hot dog festival, the three-day hot dog festival, was last week. So this day we're celebrating Memorial Day, the real one. So we're talking about, oh, my gosh, he's got a map. He's got a map and a book.
Oh, we're going on a journey.
Yeah, it's too bad. So if you hear, like, crinkling, we have a lot of paper in here. Apparently there's a map involved. This isn't good. And it's of France, you know, so we're going to have a lot of tricky-sounding names that Bill and I won't be pronouncing because, obviously, we don't know French. We need to get that Steve Martin clip on there, you know, the one, you know, he spoke French. He's going to die. So let's see. Let's tell you about Ken. He lives in Colfax. He's lived there since December 2001. He's a medically retired Navy veteran, 1964 to 1969. He served with the Amphibious Squadron 5. Okay, Ken, you've got to fill me in on this. There's all sorts of secret in the USS Seminole.
That was our ship.
Yeah, it was your ship.
It was a ship. It was a cargo attack, amphibious cargo ship.
Nice. You were a boat captain, river patrol force in the Mekong Delta, South Vietnam, from 1966 to 68. So I'm sure, you know, that wasn't exciting at all.
Those were during my communist downsizing days.
Communist downsizing.
Maybe there's a little politics to be had here. And then he worked for United Airlines from 1969 to 2002. What'd you do with United anyway?
Other than getting yelled at a lot, my job was sales. I enjoyed the job. I worked in San Francisco in our Fisherman's Wharf office for 25 of my 32 years, and we transferred. We have a branch office in Sassoon City, so my commute dropped from 49 miles to a mile and a half.
Nice.
It was pretty nice.
Nice. You commuted from Sassoon to San Francisco like every...
Every 4 days. Well, I was on a 10-hour shift.
Brutal. Yucky. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to learn some things about Ken that I didn't know. He enjoys golf. I didn't know that. Is that true? Or are you lying?
Well, the relative enjoyment is irrelevant to the talent.
Okay.
So that's the case in most people that pick up golf clubs.
Yeah, because it says your skill is not relative to enjoyment. And right. I'm like, is there a trick to this? Average 49er and hockey ice fan. Owns a trophy business. I did not know that. KMD Trophies and Awards. Really?
Yes.
Gee, that's handy. And his wife is Melba, and Melba's a past president of Kiwanis?
Yes, yes.
I am a past president of Kiwanis?
I'm a past member.
Bill, what have you done lately?
Yes, well, I was a member of Kiwanis.
That's right. I used to rope you into that. That's pretty fun. Ken volunteers with the Placer County Sheriff's Department and is involved with Junior Falcons football and city council. Forgot about that. 2008 to 2012, you were the mayor. You were the mayor, I think, when I met you.
In 2010.
11,
yes. 10-11. Or 11-12. Yeah, 10-11.
And now you're let's see, reelected in 2014 to 2018.
I have nothing else to do.
I don't believe that.
Retire and then work twice as hard. Well, good for you. Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for representing our veterans, and especially on this whole Normandy and D-Day information. You guys have a great program. We have listed it for you yous guys out on the radio. We have listed it on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Today is a day, whether you do it right this minute or you do it later on, but this is a time when you definitely want to check out the website. There is an amazing video. We'll be playing the music. When you hear kind of it's probably 5 or 6 minutes. It's a really nice, what is it called again, Ken?
John Williams piece. It's Hymn for the Fallen.
Hymn for the Fallen. I always want to say Tribute to the Fallen. Hymn for the Fallen, and it's really, really beautiful. And then there are quite a few pictures on the website of Ken's travels over there and the program that he is involved in. That is called, if my website would come up quickly, do you guys call it?
Honor Their Memory.
Honor Their Memory. And you invented that. I think I called you the originator, but bottom line is you invented it back in 1995.
Well, how that happened is...
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us why.
I first became aware of the American Battle Monument Commission's function in the June of 93 when I visited Paris, France for my first time. And across the Seine River is a town of Suresnes, which is more advanced. It's more modern than Paris is. But at the top of Mont Valérien, in that town, is a World War One American Military Cemetery. About 1,500 men are buried there, and some names of some missing. I got my first experience with one of those cemeteries. And I'd always, when I was in high school, I loved history, and I knew about Normandy. I'd always wanted to visit one of those, but at that time in my life, I was really kind of an isolationist. You know, nobody liked us, so I didn't like anybody else.
Well, you got such but a warm reception when you came back, so I can't imagine how that would have...
Well, in this particular case, my Kiwanis responsibilities required that I attend a convention in East France. So our visit was to Suresnes, and I was impressed. This was on June 30th of 93. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was impressed at how clean the cemetery grounds were, how clean the markers were. There were hardly any leaves on the ground. You know, the lawn was just beautifully green. The blacks... the fencing and the gilt on the top of the fence, just absolutely sparkling. And these superintendents, they take great care in what they do. We have, I think, 26 cemeteries in countries Western Europe, Italy, North Africa, and the Philippines that they are responsible for, as well as 26 or 27 individual markers that are some are put up by the host country and others are put up by the government. So in 1994, I was asked by our Kiwanis governor, Ted Gibbs, to serve as his international relations chairman. So I was trying to figure out what to do. I had no project in mind on an international relations, but we were coming up on the 50th anniversary of D-Day. I came home one night, and I turned on the TV, and all I saw was a white screen and no sound. So I couldn't figure out what's the matter with the television. So you turn on your little clicker,
sure,
and the volume keeps going, the bar goes keep going right and right, and there's still no sound other than hum. So what's the matter? I changed channels, and I found out there was nothing wrong with the volume. So I went back, and then about that time, all of a sudden, the camera moved back from a close-up of a white marker.
Just
moved back, and you start seeing the green grass, then the red, white, blue of the French and U.S. flags, and then it was on a cherry picker, and as it came up, then you start to see the beginning of over 9,300 graves. And Tom Brokaw was doing his live broadcast from Normandy on the 50th anniversary of D-Day, and that got me.
Yeah,
that really
say.
Got me. Yeah, it's out of press. I listened. I watched the whole ceremony. It was very well. And so that my goal was to for the next year to get all the Kiwanis clubs in our district. We have 20. I think about 600 Kiwanis clubs at the time in our district. Get every Kiwanis club to donate those graveside flags to decorate the graves on the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. That was my original goal. I wasn't getting a really fast reaction to that, and I'm kind of impatient at times. But another idea came up that we could donate flags to the cemeteries, and that we did. We got our Kiwanis club started donating flags to the cemeteries that they could use in our place, and that went real well. And I made my first visit to one of the cemeteries in Ardennes in September of 1994, where I met Hans Hooker, who was the superintendent there, and he showed us around, which was really great, and then Normandy the next day.
Now, are these cemeteries, I watched the video, and just be forewarned, if you watch that video, keep a hanky close by.
It's a Kleenex video.
Yeah, it's definitely a Kleenex video. But are the graves at those sites all American graves?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what
yes.
I thought.
The cemeteries are maintained by an American superintendent who has either usually a counterpart of the host nation. They work side by side, and then all the groundskeepers are of the host nation. And then there's other staff. Normandy has, I think, the largest staff. The last time I was there last year, I noticed a very large staff that they had that I've not seen before. The very first time I went there, there was my good friend Lee Atkinson, was the assistant. I think I was the second day on the job, which was kind of neat. And then Phil Rivers was the superintendent. And then they had two ladies there who were, I think, still there working. And then George, the groundskeeper. So it was a very small staff in 94 at my first visit. Now it's like quadruple the size of staff.
Do you have, I watched the video. Do you have the numbers, just to give people an idea how big these cemeteries are, the numbers of soldiers that are buried?
I don't have the exact numbers, but the largest one is the in Europe is the Meuse-Argonne, which I believe has over 14,000 men buried there, and that's in the Argonne Forest, the World War I cemetery. As a matter of fact, there's a road that goes right through the middle of the cemetery to another town that's there, which is right next door. The largest World War II cemetery over there is the one at Lorraine, which is in the eastern part, in the town outside the town of Metz, which is the eastern part of France. It's on off the major highway between Paris and Germany. And then the largest one with number of bodies is in the Philippines. I believe they have around 17,000. But the most impressive is they have over 35,000 names on the wall of the missing, and these are from all the sailors, mostly sailors and aviators that we lost during World War II and all the sea battles.
Right, that weren't recovered.
Right.
Yeah. It when you watch the video, they give, I mean, great photography of the cemeteries. It gives you the name of the cemetery and the number buried there. And as it rolls through, it's unbelievable. And the condition of the cemeteries, which you were talking about earlier.
Perfect.
Every blade of grass. And it amazes me that to this day they take such pride in caring for those grounds.
When I first met Lee, he told me once, he said, you know, that, no, second time or third time I went there, said any time you hear a superintendent say, my cemetery is looking pretty good, it's time for them to leave, because those guys are never satisfied with
it. It shows.
I mean, they really want to know what took place in every inch of the ground of the cemetery, and I'll relate a story in point. Lee was walking us around at Normandy, and he was telling a story about he was getting ready to close, and with the World War II vets come up, they take total precedence over anybody else that's there.
Stop the presses.
These guys have precedence.
Sure.
And they're given the royal treatment. But he was walking with this one guy, and he said, I can get a golf cart. You want to take the golf cart? And he said, oh, no. He said, I walk back then. I'll walk there now, you know. So he goes back. Yeah. They're walking along the seawall, and he stopped. And he says, that's where I came, right up that draw. And Lee says, well, I was, you know, being real proud of that he knows his cemetery grounds. Except after Captain Joe Dawson's engineers came up there. The guy looked at him. Lee says, the guy looked at me like, you know, I knew that. I was right behind him. So he gets a lot of these reactions.
They actually know what happened on the ground because they were actually there.
Right.
All right, we need to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. I know, Ken's like, already? I told you, I warned you, it's going to go fast. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. There's a ton of information. And we have some special sponsors for today's show. We're going to be putting them in and got some great information for you. Stay tuned with us.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Join me here on KCNR 1460 AM at 6 p.m. on Thursday nights for On the Spot with Linda Bott. You'll hear wonderful interviews with musicians, artists, winemakers, chefs, business owners, and designers, just to name a few. Girls just want to have fun, and we do. Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here with On the Spot with Linda Bott. Brought to you by Dandelion Boutique, Craftmaster Windshield and Repair, and Wind River Casino and Hotel.
Summer is here, and it's time to enjoy the great outdoors. Whether you're headed to the lake, Burning Falls, going fishing, or throwing a barbecue, Mighty Fine Foods is your one-stop shop for summer fun. Stop by the meat department for the best prices around and try our own country sausage made in-store. Mighty Fine has over 1,000 drinks to choose from, and we barbecue every Friday all summer long. So pick up a tri-tip, rack of ribs, barbecue chicken, or a Polish dog. Stop by the deli for fried chicken or a sandwich made just the way you like it. We are a locally owned and operated family company at 299 and Deschutes in Bella Vista. Mighty Fine Foods, your one-stop shop on the way to the lake.
This is Brian Cunett, calling from beautiful Napa County, where the Matera Cunett Family Vineyards is producing some excellent wines. I am proud to be part of the show today and represent Ken Delfino, We actually named our brand new tasting room after Ken Delfino for his patriotic service to our country, his caring for the others that have served before him. We actually have specials all the time for any vets that would like to come and visit our tasting room at Big Ranch Road and Oak Knoll Avenue in beautiful downtown Napa. So we look forward to seeing you, and congratulations, Ken. We think the world of you.
Thank you, Brian. That is awesome. Ken's mouth is hanging open. Oh, did we lose him?
Well, I decided to give him an extra minute or two to talk. He's a big talker, so we'll let him go. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Matera Vineyards, good for you guys. Support our veterans. Support our Ken Delfino. He's famous. And for those of you that are listening live here, don't forget you can always call us 530-605-4567 here at KCNR. Thanks, Matera, for doing that segment of the program. Bob, do we have another ad to run, or do we run our music? This is new. We've not done these commercials. This is like old-time radio. You know, we need, like, we don't have any soap people. If we had some soap people, that would be better, you know?
Yeah, we need
scrub it up
of,
with so-and-so.
With a banjo and a harmonica. And
so we have
we
have the namesake of the tasting room at Matera Vineyard. That's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
For all you wine drinkers out there. Back. You're joining We the People. Keep up with us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got video, we've got photos, we have a wonderful photo array there that Ken Delfino provided for us today. We're talking about Normandy and the project Honor Their Memory. Okay, Ken, quit writing. Swivel the microphone back around. We're on, bud.
Okay.
So, what's our next story, our next stop, I guess, along the journey?
Well, actually, there's a couple of things about Normandy. They have 33 sets of brothers buried there.
Oh, wow.
Two of the most notable brothers you've heard of.
Sorry.
Them in one way or another. The Nylands, Lieutenant Preston and Sergeant Robert Nyland, are buried side by side, and these were the two of the brothers that were portrayed in the movie Saving Private Ryan. There was a third brother who was captured in the South Pacific. He was on a B-25 crew, and then they were looking for the fourth one, Fritz, based on what I've read about him, I don't know if he was at that battle at the last scene in Saving Private Ryan. But it was a good story, but it's based on a true story. Colonel Ollie Reed was killed on July 30th of 1944 in the Brittany area of Normandy. And his son, Ollie Reed Jr., was killed in Italy on July 4th of 1944.
Wow.
They're both buried side by side, and I had heard that the wife had received telegrams on the same day, which had to be pretty heartbreaking. On the Wall of the Missing, there are over 1,500 names on the Wall of the Missing. There's 22 of them. Are the names of men from Bedford, Virginia. They died on 33 or 34 hit the beaches on Normandy. They were from the small town, a farming community, 3,000 people. And they hit the beaches. 19 of them were killed on the beach. Three more were killed later during the campaign. And because Bedford had the highest per capita casualty rate of any city in the United States, that is why the D-Day Memorial, the National D-Day Memorial, is there, and it's magnificent. I believe you posted a link on there, and
They
can always use donations to help keep operating. That project was started by Sergeant Bob Slaughter, who was also with the 29th Infantry Division, wanted to do something in memory of the men from Virginia. Another, on a side note, 29th, another man locally, Reading, who was with the 29th Infantry, was Leo Simon, and I was given the honor of having a flag flown over the Normandy Cemetery for him several years ago. This was done in conjunction with Special Forces Chapter 89 here in Reading. And so we honored him with a flag that had flown over his buddy's graves, as well as some sand from Omaha Beach. Another big significance, and my grandson picked this up when we were there last summer, he came up to me and he says, how come there's so many men with the number 66 Division on there? Well, these were soldiers of the 63 regiments of the 66th Infantry Division. They were on the SS Leopoldville, which is a Belgian ship, and they were being shuttled from England to Cherbourg because they were going to be released for the Battle of the Bulge, and they were torpedoed 5 miles from shore. And because they're all geared down with heavy boats and all their equipment and stuff, most of them drowned. And so there's they lost over 700 men from that division on that ship.
That would explain.
Yeah, the names on the 66. But I was really pleased that he noticed that, he really took particular notice of that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You might just walk through there and not even see it.
Right.
So how many, when you go over there, you've been there how many times?
For several years, and I'm not a, just let the public know, I'm not a rich person. I happen to work for United Airlines. I have pass benefits, which really made it really, and being a Kiwanian, that all tied in together. So I was able to get on passes, get on flights over there. Normandy's only a three-hour drive when you cross to get to the Orne River near the city of the town of Caen. I forget which one's which. It's C-A-E-N. About 3 hours to there, and then another half an hour, 45 minutes to the actual areas where we liberated. When you get to the Orne River, make a right turn and head towards the ocean or the channel, you'll come to the town, the small village of Benneville. Benneville was a target of the British Airborne 6th Airborne Division, and their job was to hold two of those bridges because there were German Panzer units to the north. That had to be kept out to keep the landing beaches free, and their orders were to hold until relieved. Well, your folks will see on a website the bridge and the memorial there that the French have put there with all the flags of all the Allies, and there are some markers there, and that's where these gliders landed at 12:15 in the morning. Now, on a glider, you don't have a go-around. It's one shot and you're in, right?
Yeah, you land or else.
The first one landed about 30 yards from the bridge.
Okay.
The second one landed behind them, and the third one landed between the two. And there was only one killed in action. That was Lieutenant Den Brothridge, who was killed in the battle on the bridge itself. They captured, they caught the Germans totally by surprise. Then they captured the Gondre Café liberated, the first building liberated, first family, the Gondre family, and the daughter, who was like 2 or 3 years old at the time, Arlette, she runs the café now. At this time, it's the unofficial headquarters of the British 6th Airborne Division.
No kidding.
Yep. You'll see them every once in a while. They're maroon berets and stuff. They're all really kind of neat.
So when you're back there, how many do you run into a lot of Americans at these locations?
Yes. There's a lot of tour buses. But I've, thanks to Lee and some of these other superintendents who have been in these different areas, they pointed out places to us where the tour buses don't go.
Nice.
And so that's really kind of neat. I'll get to some of those places later on. Well, on the way from the Normandy Cemetery towards the town of St. Mary Glees, which our paratroopers liberated, is about 2 miles away is a German cemetery. It's in the little village of Lacam, and it's there are 22,220 some odd Germans buried there. And a lot of Germans, from what I heard, were buried there because they could not be repatriated back to the East Germany. The Russians didn't want them in East Germany. So they said, no, you keep them. We don't want them. Then over the years, several years ago, German students have come over. They take care of the graves during the summer, and they also have planted a tree for every German soldier buried there. So it's a beautiful setting that you can see. And you see the contrast between the Allied graves and the German graves. Ours are all white, either markers or crosses and Stars of David. And when you look at the German cemetery there, it's very bleak, for some reason, dark and bleak. Fortunately for us, for our troops, Captain Michael Whitman is buried there. He was a German tank commander who was a very good tank commander. He was battle-hardened. He had fought in the Eastern Front against the Russians, extremely successful, and he was killed on August. He was back there. And, of course, none of the Germans moved without Hitler's orders because he didn't want to be wakened. So this whole thing was going on, right? Fortunately for us, because if I think Whitman had turned all his tanks loose, there might have been some serious problems. And also, the ones, I don't know how the British would have done against the Germans from the other direction, but we had no tanks to fight back at that time until later on in the day.
Oh, so we kind of lucked out.
Yeah, we did.
Good thing the guy had everybody scared.
And the other thing, too, about the leadership that day, a lot of officers were killed on the first waves.
Right.
He had got it down to sergeants, corporals who were taking command and just starting to do things because things needed to be done.
Sure.
And a lot of times when I'm talking to students, to athletes and stuff like that, I tell them, look, somebody's got to take charge. It doesn't look like anybody's taking charge on a court or on a field. You take charge. Somebody's got to lead and others will follow. That's what happened in Normandy.
Interesting. Yeah, you don't think about that.
Yeah.
That's true. They'd wind up leaderless and they couldn't just all sit there and wait for somebody to come boss them around.
A lot of heroism that day.
Oh, boy. Somebody had to jump up and go first. And
right.
Bodies falling all around you. That's an incredible scene. If you've never seen the movie, it's frightening.
Well, the other thing, too, is it's a tremendous sign of their training.
Yes.
That they were able to do that, because then you don't have a lot of time to sit around and figure out, you know, there's not a lot of planning that goes on. You just start moving.
Right.
I'm just so impressed, always have been impressed, every time you see pictures. I've never been to these sites. So impressed at how they take care of our fallen.
Yes.
Because they're so grateful for the service that they gave. And I think sometimes we forget that.
Well, it's not just our people who take care of them. It's a lot of the locals.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean. In this particular case, you know, the French are incredibly respectful. And in many of these places, you had made notes that the American flag flies there, not just at the cemetery, but in other places in the towns every day.
Right. Exactly. And it's really kind of neat. There is one cemetery there from the very beginning, the one in the Netherlands, in the town of Margraten, a little town of 400 people. But we have 8,300 graves there. The last one being placed there in 1994. I think it was the second Lieutenant Utrecht was found by a Dutch farmer who was taking down some trees because he wanted to expand his field. And he found a soldier buried there. He had his dog tags. And so they buried him there at Margraten. But there's two nurses there. There's a General Maurice Rose is there. He was the one whose tanks... one of the tank divisions that helped free the battle, loosen up the Battle of the Bulge, went into Bastogne. There's also, at Margraten, every single grave has been adopted by a Dutch family as their own son or daughter. And they come out and decorate on the birthday, on the anniversary of the death, wow. Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Armistice Day to them. And the rule is that only one family can have a grave. And they're going now into their third generation. No one's given up their soldier.
Oh, no kidding.
I was going to ask that question, Ken. You know, this happened, you know, over 70 years ago. Obviously, we're looking at probably at least second or third generation of folks that are taking care of these. And there's still that sense of...
That's part of their family.
Yes.
Almost heritage that they will continue to carry on their duty.
Well, it's passed on. The parents and grandparents make darn sure that their kids and grandkids know what sacrifices were made there, both on the Allied parts and also on their own families.
Wow.
There was one passage I want to read from this one book. Where to put the book? There's a book out called My Longest Night by a French lady, Geneviève Dubuc.
Oh, I'm reading that right now.
I first met her. On my first trip to Normandy, when Lee and I turned, he invited me to retreat the colors that day. He said, "You're in luck. Geneviève is here today." And so I saw at the base of one of the flagpoles a lady in a white dress suit standing very, very at attention. Got closer. She's wearing what looks like a hairpin to us, but it's lavender. It's kind of maroon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Legion of Honor. She'd been awarded the Legion of Honor by the
Queen. K243CT Reading.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Well, it wasn't easy, and there were problems along the way, but President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy have reached a deal.
After weeks of negotiations, we have come to an agreement in principle. We still have a lot of work to do, but I believe this is an agreement in principle that's worthy of the American people.
And McCarthy says the agreement is a winner.
It has historic reductions in spending, consequential reforms that will lift people out of poverty into the workforce, rein in government overreach. There are no new taxes, no new government programs. There's a lot more within the bill.
Also at townhall.com, U.S. authorities arresting two suspected Chinese government agents in connection with a plot by Beijing to disrupt and topple the exiled anti-communist Falun Gong movement. John Chen and Lin Feng charged in an indictment with scheming to revoke New York-based Falun Gong organization's tax-exempt status and paying bribes to an undercover officer posing as a tax agent. In the meantime, defense analyst Frank Gaffney with the Center for Security Policy says China's strategy of influence peddling is a form of warfare against the United States.
It's not just Joe Biden. It's this whole cohort of people who have misled us about the true danger that we're facing from China because they're on the take, frankly. And worse that, in the case of Joe Biden, he is enabling this threat in a big way. And I think encouraging the war, the shooting war that is now in prospect.
Authorities in Ukraine's capital say Kyiv has been subjected to the largest drone attack since the start of the war. Authorities say at least one person killed, several more have been wounded. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Zagorka here, and you know me. I am very cynical about products, especially those that claim to help people suffering from pain. So when I tell you that Relief Factor truly works, I want you to know that I mean it. I suffered from a stiff lower back for almost a decade, one so painful it made it difficult to kneel in church on Sundays. When I finally decided to give Relief Factor a try, I didn't ever imagine that I would find myself free of the pain. But that's what happened. Now I take Relief Factor every day. Almost 70% of the more than 500,000 people who have tried Relief Factor end up ordering more. That's because it works for them the way it worked for me. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Your first step to becoming pain-free should be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. Feel the difference.
Water transport, a cost-efficient way of moving goods and people, but the government says it emits too many greenhouse gases.
The shipping industry produces nearly 3% of the emissions many blame for warming the planet. Government and industry leaders hope so-called green shipping corridors can bring improvements. The corridors are partnerships along major shipping routes where ports, vessel companies, fuel producers, and cargo owners can collaborate. They're intended to fast-track development of cleaner technologies and operations. In January, officials announced a green corridor that would link ports in Los Angeles and Shanghai. Bob Agner reporting.
The historic impeachment of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton plunging Republicans into a battle over whether to banish one of their own. Paxton impeached yesterday by the state's GOP-controlled House of Representatives. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. Rhonda Rockstra reports rival gangs shooting it out in New Mexico.
At least three people are dead, five others injured when a gunfight broke out at an annual biker rally in Red River. The melee happened early Saturday night at the packed event where police say two groups engaged in a rolling shootout on the streets. Police moved in and apprehended what they believed to be all the shooters, then locked the town down on curfew until 4 a.m. Sunday morning. New Mexico police have sent additional officers and are asking the public to avoid the city for the time being. Rhonda Rockstra reporting.
Elon Musk brain implant company Neuralink says it's received permission from U.S. regulators to begin testing its device in human beings. Officials with the FDA would not confirm nor deny whether the agency had granted the approval, but a press officer has acknowledged now the announcement in the first place. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People Radio. You are joining us in the second hour today. And if you missed the first one, or you happen to be in Philadelphia and we sent you the second hour on a different week, we are here with Ken Delfino. He is an all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran. He's the he's in city council in Colfax, owns a trophy shop, likes to golf, but I guess he's not good at it because he said it's the skill is relative to enjoyment, is not relative to the enjoyment. Worked for United Airlines for a long time. So he is doing a project through Kiwanis.
Called Honor Their Memory.
And they fly flags over this. Is it all the cemeteries? Okay, so now we have to bring in Ken. Cue Ken.
You want this in English?
All right.
It's all the cemeteries in
you fly the flags over all the cemeteries, correct?
We have what we do is people say my dad served over there or you know an uncle, and I try to recognize as many as possible, and so we find out where they were. I just need some basic information, branch of service, and the unit, and then I can just do a lot of research and find out where they were. Where their buddies might have been buried, and then I try to get flags flown over those cemeteries because it has more meaning to them because their buddies are buried there. And all these superintendents from day one have been just extremely supportive of this project.
The superintendents of the cemetery, yeah.
Whatever you can do. I mean, these guys, they know the project. It's been going on 20 years now. Hard to believe it's that long already.
How many flags do you think you've cycled through the program up to date? Any ideas?
The superintendents have flown over 400 for me over the last 20 years.
Wow.
Now you're fooling.
Well, we're mostly World War II vets, but got some Korean War veterans in there, some Vietnam veterans as well. And, you know, if somebody wants to surprise somebody on Father's Day or Memorial Day or, you know, Armistice Day, I'm glad to do it, but I just need time because of the turnaround time.
How much time? I mean, if I wanted to do something like that, give you a year?
No, not that long. At least 2 months. And the reason
he's not the government, and he doesn't need a full year.
Oh. Well, yeah. The reason being is because on one of the shipments that I sent over, it sat in a sorting place in San Juan, Puerto Rico for like 10 days. And you have all the security stuff you have to worry about,
right.
Stuff going to an embassy, because he's the cheapest way to do it is send it, priority mail to the embassy addresses. But then you can send it faster, but it's more expensive to send it directly to the post office, because what we do is we pay the return post as well, because we want this as a no-cost item to the American Battle Monuments Commission.
So you send the flag over.
Yes.
They fly it over the cemetery, repackage it, and send it back to you.
And they have a certificate saying that certifies that this flag was flown over this cemetery in appreciation of the service of so-and-so.
Oh, okay.
And then they have the date and superintendent's
signature. Very personalized.
Signature. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, and you can't order these online. Yeah, it has to go through a person-to-person type project.
Outstanding. So we will put contact information on the website, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
Make it real easy. People can go on and read about the project. And I do hope you you do go to the site, because we've got a whole host of pictures. We've got a really wonderful video and a lot of links to some sponsors of this particular program and some just great folks. Matera,
well,
Vineyards.
We've got a video on there that shows pictures of all the cemeteries. The American cemeteries in all the different towns and countries, and the number of Americans who are buried there. And it's very
stunning.
It's.
We'll play the music a little bit later in the hour. You'll hear it in the background. All right. So what haven't we talked about yet besides everything? The time goes shooting past. Where are we now
gonna,
on our travels, folks?
You're going to talk to us a little bit about the Ardennes and some folks you met over there, British couple. That
right. On my first visit to the Ardennes Cemetery, which is on the outer fringe of where the Battle of the Bulge took place in Belgium, is the Ardennes Cemetery. First met Hans Hooker there, and he took us around. And on the way out, there's a couple came in. A gentleman was dressed very nattily with coat and tie. And this is in September. There's no special occasion. And Hans introduced us to the couple. I can't remember their names. But they were a British couple. He was an RAF Spitfire pilot, and she was an RAF nurse. And they had hosted an American flyer in her home in England. and he was shot down, killed in battle, and buried there at the Ardennes Cemetery. Well, they came over. It's not a quick trip, you know, from England over to the Ardennes, and they're just come over to decorate his grave on his birthday. And that's the kind of dedication that these folks have. We do have a large cemetery in World War II cemetery in Cambridge, and in England, and also another one in Brookwood, which is a World War I, and I believe that's the smallest of all the cemeteries in the ABMC. I think about 450. I don't have my charts. So I'm trying to remember what the
numbers
are.
You didn't bring that?
Yeah, no.
I can't believe that over there. You don't have a chart at that.
In fact, I left my notes on my printer before I walked out the door. So I'm doing this for them.
Yeah. What amazed me was after watching that video, the numbers. I think we tend to forget how many soldiers we lost during World War II. 3,000 at one, 4,000, 10,000, 9,000. And when you see the pictures and the condition of those cemeteries, which, I mean, they have every blade of grass cut, every stone polished. It's incredible. But when you watch that video, it really hits home. It really does.
Yeah, they take great care. And it's hard. The one in the Ardennes is a little difficult to find, but it's not that far from the city of Bastogne, which was, you know, a photo there of a tank in McCall Square where our flag flies every day. And
just a big giant tank right in the middle of the square.
And look at it closely, you'll see the hole in the back of it where a rocket went into it. But the biggest attraction is just outside of town, the Martisan Memorial, which is dedicated to the sacrifice of all the American troops that lost their lives by the Belgians. Another thing that was not well known is that when the war broke out, of course, most of our guys were in Paris relaxing because they thought the war was almost over. They got into the front, and they went to the battlefront, and the difference was the Germans were all prepared for winter with winter clothing. Our guys were not. The Germans had, you know, their snow, their white-colored uniforms. We had not. What I heard that the Belgians did in the whole area is they gathered all their white sheets, as many blankets as they could gather, and they gave them to our guys so they could use white to camouflage themselves during the battle. And there was a very very close bond between the Belgians and the Americans in that. There's a lot of sacrifices on both sides. So that's one reason our flag flies there, and also at the Martisan Memorial, which is just massive. They have a new museum out there which takes a lot of time to go through. At least 2 or 3 hours to go through a brand new museum out there. But yeah, they would not. They have a restaurant called Nuts. to honor General McAuliffe.
Yep.
And there's actually another favorite sign of ours. There's a Hotel Melba, which and my wife's name is Melba, and so take that picture all the time too.
There you go. She's got her own special hotel.
That's right. It's Beth Western.
What about talk to us about Luxembourg?
The Luxembourg American Cemetery. After Lee was an assistant in Normandy, he was promoted and put in charge of the Luxembourg American Cemetery. We have over, I think it's 5,400, just over 5,500 men buried there. It is the only cemetery in Luxembourg, and it's also where General Patton's buried. Hmm. Now, there's a story that Lee told me about this. General Patton is the only general in these cemeteries who has his own separate area by himself. It looks like he's commanding the troops. There's a photo in there which shows one grave separate from all the rest of them. That's Luxembourg.
Interesting.
As the story goes, there was an argument that was back and forth between the American government and the Luxembourg royalty. They wanted him, the Luxembourgers wanted him to have a place of honor. The Americans said, no, he's going to be buried like General Roosevelt and the other generals with the troops. Says, no, we want him to have a place of honor. And they went back and forth. Finally, the Luxembourgers said, I know you'll probably send him an email if I'm wrong, that we want him to have a place of honor. If you're not going to honor him in your cemetery, then we are going to bury him in the Royal Cemetery. So that's why General Patton has his place of honor.
Yeah.
Now, also, there are no next of kin buried there, you know, like in Arlington. One morning, Lee went out and noticed there's some stuff on the ground of the cemetery. They didn't know what it was. And they found out that Mrs. Patton had died recently and she'd been cremated. So you just put two and two together and try to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, we might be able to figure that out. Let's see. Before we go to our next story, let's take a really quick break. We'll actually try to stay on schedule. We'll give that up right after this break, but just for now. You're listening to We the People Radio. We are honoring our veterans and our fallen on Memorial Day. Real Memorial Day.
Real Memorial Day.
Yeah. Actually, it's the day after, but close enough. Closer than last weekend. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
He was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up, and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. He made a blow of bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next year the cap went out and drafted the band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Our culture of compassionate, patient-centered quality health care is our mission at Shasta Regional Medical Center. Providing superior clinical excellence across a wide array of specialties is why Shasta Regional is ranked as one of America's top 100 hospitals for the second year in a row and named again as a top 50 cardiovascular hospital. We are proud to be recognized as a leader for quality care and patient outcomes. And for our commitment to treating people well in our community. Taking a kinder, more gentle approach to wellness is an important part of healthcare. We strive to make minimally invasive diagnostic and treatment decisions whenever possible, helping patients receive the best care available, resulting in quicker recovery and a rapid return to normal activities. At Shasta Regional, our physicians, nurses, and staff emphasize treating the whole person and not simply the ailment, resulting in the highest level of care. We know medical care can change the body, but treating people well can change lives.
Hi, you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. This is We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, or on the phone, 530-605-4567. We have with us President Dan Christensen of the Special Forces Association, Chapter 89. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Super. What do you have to tell folks about your chapter?
Well, I just want to let everybody know that we are here in the Redding and Northern California area. We're also in the Southern Oregon and Northern Nevada regions. We're most active in Redding, Reno, and Eureka areas. We are a memorial chapter. We're named after Alan C. Johnson. Sergeant Johnson was a Special Forces medic killed in Afghanistan on a combat patrol in 2005. We have several missions. First, we are a service organization supporting various charities, a scholarship in for Los Molinos High School, which is where our namesake graduated from. We're also a social group. We have quarterly meetings, a lot of formal, informal gatherings, Oktoberfest, Christmas party, that sort of thing. Most of our members were in Special Forces. Some served during the Vietnam War, some during the first Gulf War, such as myself, and others in the current War on Terror. A few of our members still serve overseas. Some of our members are highly decorated combat veterans, and some never left the USA. A few of our members, veterans, served in units that were associated with Special Forces, such as the Brownwater Navy or Task Force 160 or Air Force PJs. We are an Army Special Forces chapter, but we welcome other special operations folks looking for a local veterans group. People that serve in special operations tend to be cut from the same cloth, and we get along with them pretty well. Mostly we're a small band of brothers, becoming friends, sharing stories, and reminding ourselves of who we are and where we came from. And we can be reached on Facebook by looking up Special Forces Chapter 89 or emailing sfchapter89@gmail.com. And if you're a current or former member of Special Operations, we'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Dan. We'll post your stuff on our website.
That'd be great.
We appreciate it. Thanks for your service.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic. I know. Welcome to the speediest radio program ever. You know, the thing that's great about We the People Radio is sometimes we make your blood pressure go up. But then days like today, we just, you know, give you information. We have our little walking history book here, Mr. Ken Delfino, all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran, and really, really an expert on all this. Normandy, you should see the pictures and all that. I'm going to do my best to get you some live local gigs here so that you can actually show all these pictures, because radio just is not helpful with the photos. You can, however, go to the website. We've posted a chunk of them, and there's a wonderful video on there as well. So we hope you'll take a look at that. All right, where are we headed next on our tour?
Flanders Field.
Flanders Field. A lot of us, my generation, we grew up, memorizing the poem, Flanders
yes.
Field, the poppies blow, and we have a cemetery. It's a World War I cemetery. And the first time I visited there, I met the superintendent, Tom Cavanis, who's actually from born in Auburn and raised in Tahoe Vista. So he's a local California. Matter of fact, there's another Californian who's the assistant superintendent at Pinal, Shane Williams, who's from Roseville, former Air Force gentleman. Met him last summer. But with Flanders, it's a small World War I cemetery. It's in a kind of like a high-tech area in the town of Waregem, Belgium, which isn't that far from the above the French border. And we have, don't forget the number we have buried there, but I've stopped there several times. The second to last time I was there was like 29 degrees, and there was ice all over the ground. But it's as far as that area goes, on this last trip, we usually stay in the town of Ypres, the Belgians call it, and the French call it Ypres, Y-P-R-E-S. There are three or four major battles there where the town was pretty much demolished. Mm-hmm. And see some of the photos. And today it's a beautiful, beautiful city. They've restored the church, the cloth factory, etc. That's where I got my first taste of really good Belgian chocolate by Leonidas. But on this last trip, I was reading something, and I wasn't aware of that just outside of town, there's a place called the Essex Farm Cemetery. And in that area, a lot of the farmers have given up their land for the British Empire soldiers who were killed during World War I. And so they maintain those cemeteries, which comes under the jurisdiction of the British Commonwealth, Graves Commonwealth, I think it's called. And Essex Farm Cemeteries were then-Captain John McCrae penned the words in Flanders Field. So if people stand on that ground, and that was on the Yser, I think it's called the Yser-Ypres Canal, really beautiful, and that's also where the youngest soldier in the British Empire is buried. I think he's 15 years old. He's buried there. I mean, these guys are serious about defending their countries. But in the town of Ypres itself is a big memorial, and I forgot to put the website on this, called the Menin Gate, M-E-N-I-N. It's between Ypres and the town of Menin. It's a huge, a three-story structure. It's like a gate into the city, into the main entrance of Ypres. And on this building are carved over 58,000 names of the British Empire missing in action.
Wow, that's just missing.
58,000 just missing.
Wow.
And then you look at it, and then you realize, you keep forgetting how big the British Empire was. You've got names there from Nepal, South Africa, mm-hmm. You know, all these countries, and Europe and South Africa and the far Pacific.
Well, back in those days, they didn't really have a good system for keeping track of their soldiers, like with dog tags and so forth, did they?
I think they did have dog tags, but it was a different kind of a battle. Bodies were just literally destroyed,
right?
You know, and with all the mud and all the poison gases and stuff they used, they don't want to go in those areas. I was fortunate to get involved in the Kiwanis Project, helping a Kiwanis Club. They wanted to honor a cavalryman, Corporal William Leggett, who died in a cavalry battle, in a little town of Galui, which is just over the French border. And so we got that all fixed up, and it was really neat to see a project from its infancy to be finally developed. And I saw the statue that's on those grounds there. But I got a great education from the Belgians, and they also honor everything in the whole area, and that's how I found out about the farms, that the farmers giving up their land as a thank you to the families of the soldiers who are laid resting on their sites.
Mm-hmm.
But every night at the Menin Gate, there's what's called the last post. It's a British ceremony, or at 7:45 p.m. they close off the main gate, and then people start coming out. You talked about earlier about the children coming out and the message being passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've gone to one of these last posts, I've seen little ones in tow. The adults bring out their kids. The next generation bring out their kids, and it's being passed on even to the five-year-olds.
So the respect for the fallen isn't an old people's club.
Right. Yeah. And it's crowded. I mean, it's... You know, I was there one night, and there was no reason special evening. There were like 500 people there. And it's a short ceremony, about 45 minutes to an hour, and they play a bugle. It'll all be on the website if you look at the Minim Gate or the last post.
So it is truly...
I will post that now.
Something that they pass down through their generations to keep the memory of what happened there alive. I mean,
correct.
That's their history as well.
That's right.
That's really fantastic. Largest cemetery in Europe?
The largest one is the Meuse-Argonne, which is northern France near the Belgian border.
And is this American cemetery?
U.S. Yeah, these are all U.S. cemeteries I'm focusing on. Over 14,000 buried. I don't remember the name of the wall, the missing. The last time I was there was in conjunction with the dedication of the Sergeant York Memorial, a gentleman... Colonel Doug Mastriano, who's still active duty, he'd been working on a project for 6 years trying to find the exact spot where York earned his Medal of Honor, and finally over they got the forensic evidence, they found the casings from the .45 automatic that York used when he finished off the last Germans to try to charge him. And so there's a memorial there now there, which is partly sponsored by our Kiwanis Kalinuba District and five other sponsors. In that site, when the farmer found out about the land and what took place on that land, he ended up giving the York family that land in honor of what took place in that during that battle. And Doug's son Josiah earned his Eagle Scout by hacking out a path and creating the pathway and putting signage, etc., throughout this entire area. I think it's about a mile walk where everything took place. So it's a hard place to find. The little village of Chatel Shahri has 160 people. They have an 11 member council.
Oh boy!
But it's a town.
But still, even with those small numbers, they don't forget.
No.
They will not forget what happened there, and they're going to keep that memory alive.
Exactly. I was able to meet Sergeant York's son George, his grandson Gerald, and his great granddaughter Deborah. They were there for that ceremony. But on the next day, I heard about I was that close to Meuse-Argonne, and I had not seen Mr. Rivers since he left Normandy. So I went over to visit, and we touched bases. And actually, Phil was involved in the next day with the York ceremony. He was actively involved in that.
And so we have that posted on here.
Oh, okay.
So there's a great link to that, and they just posted the ceremony that you were talking about before.
Oh, great.
The gate. I'm over here posting, so my lips aren't working. My lips are on break while you boys talk.
Okay.
All right. So we're let's go one more location, and we're calling Pete back.
Oh, okay. Wall.
Bill is our tour guide.
Missing.
Oh, that was the one at Normandy.
Normandy.
Yeah, we covered that. It's
okay.
Pretty impressive. Yeah.
All right. Man, you got some French names here. I can't.
Okay. This is like a menu item. Pick number, 11.
The bridge
with fries.
The Lafayette Bridge.
Oh
yes.
Yeah, Lafayette.
Yes. Okay, Lafayette.
Yesterday.
It's a little village, actually a commune, mm-hmm. of about four or five buildings, which is now a B&B. But that is, if you all recall, the last scene of Saving Private Ryan, where Tom Hanks died.
Right.
There is no town there, and you can. Yeah, I don't know if you have those photos on the website on the site. But there's no town there because the Germans have flooded all those fields across the river. On that site is a huge statue of a paratrooper kind of leaning on his knee, looking at the German positions. It's called Iron Mike, and that was dedicated recently, I think 97, that was dedicated. And there's a French and U.S. flag there. That's the fifth place in that area where our flag flies every day. And then down the road, about a mile and a half, is the village of Amfreville, which was liberated by another. Now, that bridge... Both sides needed that bridge. You can see that's not a very wide bridge. We needed it to counterattack. The Germans needed it to counterattack. We needed it to break out. Mm-hmm. So the bridge wasn't destroyed. But there was a site on there, I forget the name of the site, where four or six paratroopers just kept blowing up German tanks on that road, which caused problems for the Germans until we were able to break out.
But that's allegedly so much history there.
Yeah, that's allegedly where they found Private Ryan, one of the Nyland boys, which is really is still, I don't know, I can't find proof of that he was at that actual site.
Interesting.
He was a paratrooper, but I can't find that he was there.
We have lots of history with bridges and locations, and the one we were talking about last hour that I could not think of, the bridge where they made the deal, nobody blow up the bridge because we all need it, so we're just going to, that's off limits, is the Ponte Vecchio in Florence.
Oh, yeah.
Really, famous, and it still has the same old shops. They were the original goldsmiths and all that. They were the merchants. And all these shops, you should go look at the picture if you haven't ever seen it before. The shops hang out over the river. It really, it's kind of spooky, actually. We went in some of those shops, and you look out the window, and you think, mm-hmm. Well, this has been here since when?
Well, if you go there to visit those shops, there's also an American cemetery there in Florence. That's one of two in Italy. The other one's down in Sicily, outside Rome.
Very good. Well, we made arrangements, you know, back in the day, and everybody honored them. What a novel idea. All right. So we need to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, especially today for today's program. WeThePeopleRadio.us has a ton of information, links, and photos.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Jones's Fort, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find a gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have four full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
Hi, Mark Story here to let you know that Haven Humane Society is taking great pride in serving the pet population and pet owners in the community. As CEO of Haven Humane, I invite everyone to check out our new adoption center and all the programs we have in place to help the animals in our care find their forever homes. And our spay-neuter clinic is also here to offer those families on a fixed income pet vaccinations and spay-neuter services. Contact Haven Humane at 241-1653 or visit us, East Side Road off of 273.
Hi, here at We the People Radio today, we have some special sponsors and supporters and information for you. And our information of the moment here is Pete Horton from the Kiwanis Kalaniva Foundation. Hiya, Pete.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks. You know, pediatric trauma kills more kids in the U.S. every year than any other cause. And recognizing the need for education and training in the areas of pediatric trauma and injury prevention, the Kiwanis Kalaniva Foundation established our pediatric trauma program together with the Kiwanis Clubs of California, Nevada, and Hawaii. The mission of our program is to develop local projects which will reduce the number of children who are killed or injured as a result of trauma by providing training, community outreach, and education to children and families living in our communities. In addition to our focus on pediatric trauma, the foundation supports the Kiwanis family through grants, which assist Gowanus clubs to meet their own community needs, along with programs which encourage and train young leaders. We directly support programs such as the Gowanus Family House in Sacramento, as well as Gowanus District programs such as the Sergeant York Memorial. More information about the foundation can be found at www.cnhfoundation.org.
Thanks, Pete. Big supporters of Gowanus. Actually, 50% of the people in this room are past presidents. Go figure.
We appreciate that, Aaron. Thank you so much.
And Ken's giving us two bits here. Need Bob to turn on his microphone. There we go.
Pete, I escorted Pete his first visit to Bellowood. Pete, can you give us your opinion of your first visit to Bellow?
Oh, you know what? Let's come back on. Let's run our music and come back in. Pete, can you hang with us for a minute?
I can.
Absolutely. Hit it, Bob. Welcome back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have with us Ken Delfino, all-around good guy, Vietnam veteran, and really basically an expert on all this. Okay, he's way more expert than we are. Don't shake your head over there, Mr. Delfino, on Normandy. We are celebrating Memorial Day the real way with a tribute to our fallen. With us on the phone, we have Pete Horton with us from the Gowanus Calneva Foundation, and he's been giving us some information on the breaks, but he and Ken have been on this mission of flying the flags over the cemeteries, and they have a story to tell us.
I took Pete to his first visit to Bellow, and Bellowwood, which is the only place where the Marines fought in World War I for 4 months from June to November of 1918. Pete, I'd like to get your opinions on how you felt when you walked those grounds, being a former Marine.
That's hard to put into words, Ken. It really is. But, you know, the Marine Corps is known for its esprit de corps, and when you go to boot camp, you learn about Bellowwood and some of the places that are really sacred to the Marine Corps. And, of course, hearing about them and actually stepping onto that ground, going to the flagpole with you, flying a flag, looking at the trenches that went up and the Marines fought from in 1918, I can't really put that into words. And then, of course, the Einmarn Cemetery, which is adjacent to Bellowwood, where I believe about 1,500 Marines were laid to rest. It was one of the more moving experiences of my lifetime, and Diane and I reflect about that all the time. We have some remembrances here in my office from the superintendent that you and I met together, Ken. So it's always with me, and it will always be with me until I'm gone from this world.
And I just want to add that any former Marine who has to go to Paris has no excuse for not making that trip out there, because it's only an hour and 10 minutes. So if you get lost, no more than 2 hours away from Charles de Gaulle Airport to the east. It's very easy to get to. It's very moving, and there's also nearby the Bulldog Fountain, from which every Marine is supposed to take a drink.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't have EPA. You don't have to worry about the EPA crap over there.
Gosh, isn't that awesome?
So you can just drink from that, and it's supposed to rejuvenate them. So it's just spirit, you know, type thing.
Yeah.
Pete had a drink from it. Major Lieutenant Colonel Chambers, who went with us on another trip, drank from that. So, you know, hopefully they'll have a spring in their step from that, but it's on private property, but it's open to all former Marines. The owners don't mind that they go in there and take a drink.
That's fabulous.
I'm going to make two comments, if I can, Ken. Number one, there's no such thing as a former Marine. You know that.
I was going to.
And number number two, it is an easy drive from Paris, and it is easy to find. Just don't follow Ken's directions. Call me. I'll give you the directions.
Oh, so there's more to this story.
slightly edited.
So maybe this is why my coworker was falling down in bunkers and whatever all they were doing.
That's funny. It all starts with the navigator, doesn't it?
Yeah, and one last thing. Also, our Calnego Foundation was formed based on an emergency in Siskiyou County on the when the Klamath River flooded in 1965. Our then governor, Charles Dunlap, needed a fast way to raise money to help those folks in that area, and so that's our roots is in Siskiyou County.
Interesting.
50 years ago.
That's fabulous.
Well, thanks for that.
We really appreciate you popping in and giving us informational minutes, and we thank you for your service, and we know that there are no former Marines. There are just Marines.
Well, it's a pleasure. I thank you for having me this afternoon, and it's always a pleasure to be able to embarrass Ken anytime.
Thanks, Pete. We appreciate you stepping
Thanks
in to
so
do
much.
That.
Okay, bye-bye.
Is he off the air? I get last word.
Yeah, go ahead. Take a shot at him.
Convention's coming up, Pete.
That's funny. Yeah, mute the guy on the phone and take him out.
There you go. Hey, Ken, before we run out of time, I know there was a couple of guys you wanted to, or a couple of stories you wanted to retell.
The Battle of the Complicated Place with a short-sounding name spelled long, starts with a G.
Well, there are two stories, one very sad one and one extremely powerful. The Battle of Grennes, the town of Graignes, is in the Normandy area. The village was, in the first days, a lot of our paratroopers landed there, about 170 or so landed, but they were from different units, mostly 82nd Airborne. But they landed in this area and trying to regroup. So they go into this village and they talk with the mayor, and the mayor said, "Yes, we'll host you here." And a German patrol was shot at, was ambushed, and the Germans were killed. And so then that led to the town coming under siege. To make a long story short, the Americans were badly outnumbered by a SS Panzer Grenadier Division. But our guys held off as long as they could because they were running low on ammunition, had no resupply area. After the Germans took over the town, they killed 31 of our guys, including prisoners, and 36 of the villagers, including children, nuns, and the priest. No qualms, and they burned down the town. So that massacre, a lot of people don't know about this area. My friend Lee took us to that site, and so that is now one of the places where I don't think the tour buses go unless you're on a private tour. So people should be made aware of that battle that took place at that place.
Say the name again.
Grennes, Graignes.
Now, are there markers and memorials there?
In France, you don't find the big advertising billboards that you'll see in America.
Right.
Beach Boy landing, souvenirs, all this kind of stuff. People have to know, they know where they're going.
Right.
And so, because they don't want to diminish the sacrifice by commercializing it. And
well,
no,
what
you
a novel
find,
idea.
You won't find souvenirs at this place.
No, but is there a memorial built there?
Yes, there is. There's a plaque on there honoring all those, all the 60 plus people who were massacred by the Nazis that day. In one case, they had some of the soldiers degraze, and then they put the dead in there, and then the Germans shot the Americans and just covered them up right on that. Mm. So that took place there. But on another part of that area, not that far away, is a little village of Angouville-au-Plan. In this town, the village was, well, the battle was going back and forth. There was a church right in the middle of the town. And one of the battles, two of the medics, Kenneth Morin and Robert Wright, were taken wounded. They confiscated the church, decided that's going to be their medical station. So they took the wounded off the battlefield into this church, and they took care of them. Then there's some German soldiers. They took German soldiers, and they took care of the Germans as well. So the battle went back and forth, and finally one German officer went in to check to see if anybody was in there. They saw the two American medics working on prisoners, but there were prisoners on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't figure out what was going on. And unbeknownst to the Americans, there were two snipers up in the belfry of the church.
Oh.
So they witnessed what was going on, and they came down and told the German officer. So apparently a truce was called, and they said this area was off limits, and there was everybody from both sides wounded going here, and Moore and Wright took care of the prisoners, of the wounded on both sides. They're commemorated. There's a memorial there, and I think both soldiers received the Silver Star for their actions. And to this day, a very small village, a lady across the street has a key to the church. If you want it, you come in after hours. The last time we were there, they were fixing the roof, but there's a beautiful window that DHL paid for. When you go to the side, you'll see a window that DHL paid for commemorating the landing. One of the pews still has blood on the seats. They're not taking that pew out. That's staying in there. And there's a marker. There's a stone in there. It's marked 1769, so I don't know if that's when that church was built or not. There's no notation of that. So there's two contrasting stories about two. You have the Nazis, and then the other one was a German officer, not an SS trooper.
Right.
So there's where the differences were between them.
Wow.
And then that's not on the stop either of the tour buses that I don't believe. We've never seen one.
So that's why, in your case, going back over and over has been a huge advantage, because you learn one more thing, mm-hmm. and then go back and meet some other people and one more thing.
Well, I got great teachers over there, Lee and Annie. They just take these sites, and he said, I have another one for you to check out the next time you come.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, we need to take one more quick break, and we've got something really great planned for you at the end of the hour, so it's only a few minutes away, but don't go away. It'll be awesome. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Today's show has a ton of information on the webpage. Please send it to your friends and family and let them experience it.
In May of 1941, the war had just begun. The Germans had the biggest ship that had the biggest gun. The Bismarck was the fastest ship that ever sailed the sea. On her decks were guns as big as steers and shells as big as trees. Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman, he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the terror of the sea. Stop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees. We find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
The interdicts are running, boys, it's been those guns around.
But when we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down.
Summer is here, and it's time to enjoy the great outdoors. Whether you're headed to the lake, Bernie Falls, going fishing, or throwing a barbecue, Mighty Fine Foods is your one-stop shop for summer fun. Stop by the meat department for the best prices around and try our own country sausage made in-store. Mighty Fine has over 1,000 drinks to choose from, and we barbecue every Friday all summer long. So pick up a tri-tip, rack of ribs, barbecue chicken, or a Polish dog. Stop by the deli for fried chicken or a sandwich made just the way you like it. We are a locally owned and operated family company at 299 in Deschutes in Bella Vista. Mighty Fine Foods, your one-stop shop on the way to the lake.
Having trouble finding cute clothes and accessories in town? Look no further than Dandelion Boutique in our very own downtown Reading. Specializing in the hottest brands from Spanx to Alex and Ani, and of course, a huge selection of Brighton jewelry, perfect to make any gift or occasion memorable. So come say hi to the girls of Dandelion at their new spot, 1322 Pine Street, or call 247-1292. Dandelion, unique gifts and more.
Slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kayla, and they call me the Mouse.
And I'm Red, they call me the Bear. How's California working out for you? Want to change it for the better?
Wake up to your chemical sunrise and tune in to the Jefferson State of Mind.
We'll be discussing representation, regulations, and restoring our republic.
Catch us here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9.
On KCNR 1460.
I feel no shame, I'm proud of where I came from. I was born and raised in the boondocks.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460. KCNR.
And I'm proud to be.
today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Absolutely. Well said. Well sung, I should say. That is just a great version of that. So we're celebrating Memorial Day weekend in the way it should be celebrated, remembering our fallen and speaking with veterans. So you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we've got a ton of information. I hope you send this show to your friends and family. It's educational and just a nice break from our typical politics, although we did get a shot in at the EPA, so on the total loss.
You caught that.
it's just wrong if we let them all slide. You know, we got to get something in there. Okay, so in our here on our we had way more stuff to do today than we had time to do it. But what did we miss?
Ken? Do we have time to talk about Reed Allen and John Hunter? Or do you
sure.
Want
to...
Well, I'm saying sure. I don't know the story.
I said these are the World War II.
Yeah, I don't know.
These are some of the gentlemen that I've done this project for. Reed Allen was one of our district governors during World War II. He was on a sub chaser in the South Pacific. He's as strong as ever. Just you know, goes around. Everybody in our district loves him. And I had an opportunity to be able to surprise him. He was a Navy veteran, so I had a flag flown over the USS Arizona and presented it to him. It's really so rewarding to be able to surprise people with this thing. That's the whole thing, folks. If you want to do this for somebody, there's a lot of collusion that needs to be done to pull this off. And it's so rewarding, especially when they have no idea of what's coming, but the whole family knows what's coming. So we did that in front of another Kiwanis function, and he's a tough guy, but he's very patriotic, and it really affected him when he got that flag, because he was in the Pacific at the time World War II broke out.
Okay.
Second person on there, Bob Gibbons, a very dear person. Bob was my governor. He was my leader in 1992-93. And he named his team the Pathfinders. We all have team names
in Kiwanis.
In Kiwanis. And he named ourselves the Pathfinders. And I knew what the Pathfinders were, but I didn't realize that he was one. Bob was one of Bill Donovan's OSS boys before it became CIA. He was working with a group in St. Mary Glees in that area. His code name was number 33 because on the jump day, he was a 33rd. He's counted 33, and he's out the plane. That's technology in those days.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding.
So he met with his in January of 44. He met with his counterparts, and then he came back. And then sometime in May, he was on another mission up in northern France, and apparently there was an accident, or the plane was shot, and it crash landed on arrival back in England. And subsequently, he was not able to jump, make that jump. I found out all this stuff and was able to surprise him with a flag that we had flown over the village of St. Mary Glees. And it was nobody in Kiwanis in the organization knew that he was getting this. His family was in on it, and it was just really kind of neat because his daughter said that this is the first time they ever seen him cry.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, the mayor signed a letter, beautiful stationery.
Yeah, what a great feeling to be able to give somebody something that means so much to them.
Right, and you're one of my influences for doing this project as well. I have a lot to say. I know this is going to Philadelphia. In August 68, I was an unattended guest of the Philadelphia Naval Hospital, where I spent until December 30th of that year. During my time there, I still remember all the friendship and the help that the citizens of Philadelphia gave me. A sailor who was unable to walk at the time. The Penn National Bank came in. I still remember when they all came in, 3-something in the afternoon on a Friday, and all of a sudden they broke out into joy to the world. And cookies, everything. The Ford Motor Company took us out to a show and dinner at the in Cherry Hill, in New Jersey. The Sunoco family, the gals, the daughters, and their friends came out and picked us all up. We had a free invitation to a Christmas Eve party in at their huge mansion. I didn't get to go because I was got tickets to a hockey game, and I'm being an avid hockey fan. The Oakland Seals were playing, so but I understand I missed a hell of a party. I just want to close this out with a speech. In the movie about the Battle of the Bulge, on Christmas Day morning, the chaplain had a reading. It says, was this trip necessary? I modified it a little bit. It goes like this. The facts are that none of us wanted that war, but the Nazis. A great many people tried to deal with them before we got involved, but many of them died. After thousands more died, there was no other reason but to fight. There was a great lesson in this, and those of us who learned it the hard way are not going to forget it. We must never again let any force dedicated to a super race, super idea, or super anything become strong enough to impose itself upon a free world. We must be smart enough and tough enough in the beginning to put out the fire before it starts spreading. So my answer to that question is yes, this trip was necessary. As time goes by, a lot of people are going to forget, but we won't, and don't anyone get away with telling you that you are a sucker for fighting the war against tyranny. I want to personally add, at this time, the oppressed we serve to free. My brothers in Vietnam, those who picked up the torch and served in Panama, Afghanistan, Iraq, and other places around the world that are not mentioned. People there may not have understood our mission, but in time, either they did or they will. I am proud to see that in the Vietnamese students that I have worked with in key clubs, the young Vietnamese adults I've seen succeed coming here with nothing, but working their skin and bone, learning our language, and making the hard work and becoming taxpayers and now even serving in our government. So remember every one of you out there in uniform, all of you who have worn it. We're together. There's more of us that care about this country deeply. And for as long as I'm alive, I'll continue this project of honoring their memory. Well, thank you, Aaron and Bill, for giving me the time to do this on your program.
It was our great honor to have you. What a wonderful tribute to our servicemen and women who have gone before us, gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks a million. We'll just leave you with this great music for the end of the program. This comes from where, Ken? This is John Williams.
John Williams from Saving Private Ryan.
Fantastic piece, and the video that has this music is also online on the website. Join us there for follow up pictures and links from the program. WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be back next week with more great information.
This has been our special salute to the veterans on We the People.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.